Speaking of wrong, well, this morning driving into work, I mean, it's not very often that this happens in the world of broadcasting. Two separate newsreaders in two separate studios in this building reading sports news and both coming up with the same cock-up. Brenton Van Nistelrooy, the brand on Radio Sport to start with.
Hicker Elliott is repaying the Chiefs for the support they have shown him throughout a tumultuous year in his rugby career. The former All Blacks hooker has signed a two-year extension with the Super Rugby franchise. A bulging disc in his neck saw Elliott's career at a crossroads last year.
Well, the great thing is that Brendan, very smooth, calmly just kept on going. Matt Brown, even better.
Hicker Elliott's repaying the Chiefs for the support they've shown him throughout a tumultuous year in his rugby career. Former All Blacks hooker has signed a two-year extension with the Super Rugby side. A bulging disc in his neck saw Elliott's career at a crossroads.
We need to talk.
Yeah, we do need to talk. Sav and Graham Beasley from Wellington with us. Andrew, magnificent, surely.
That was pretty good.
Graham, you enjoyed that.
Well, I did. It's been quite a week for that, hasn't it, with Brendan Julian in the West Indies talking about the
Wang Farrell.
Andrew, Brown's had some pearlers over the years, Matt, hasn't he?
But we've got to resurrect. The favourite one, of course, is when he forgot his own name. He got to the end of the news bulletin, And you know how that happens, Andrew.
Yeah, it's called old age.
Let's look at the cricket to start with, Graham. I don't know how much of it you caught this morning. Well, 349. I mean, you've got to think that that's got to be defendable, but it's not when you're bowling pies, when you're bowling short, and I suppose short boundaries, but we just got smacked up.
It's one day cricket, but not as we know it, this series, isn't it? It's just the game has been transformed, and finally England are catching up with the rest of the world. You know, if you think back a few months to what they were like in the World Cup, just completely abject. But here they are playing with a spring in their step. Playing aggressively and with confidence. It's quite a turnaround, really.
Is it a worry, though, what we were pitching up to them, Andrew?
Yeah. I think so, Martin. I think the bowlers have become spooked. And it's not just New Zealand bowlers. It's probably international cricket bowlers all around the world, including IPL and T20 and what have you. Gone are the days where I think you bowl a bad ball, then you work it out and you head the next ball to deliver something better where the batsman can't attack it. I think bowlers are trying to still do that these days. The batsmen are just too good. The attacking mindset has now taken over and the bowlers just do not have answers.
I wonder whether the tactics are exactly right. We've got this obsession with taking wickets as opposed to containing. I mean, surely there's got to be a balance between the two, Graham.
There does, and I think a lot of our bowling attack relies on if it's going to swing. I mean, obviously not having bolt there may have made some difference, but I think if it's not swinging, we struggle. But I think Andrew's completely correct when he says the bowlers are spooked. You know, they've given up bowling Yorkers because they're too scared of getting it just a little bit wrong.
Well, you know in the World Cup, Andrew, that instead of bowling the Yorker, you were bowling it kind of outside off stump, weren't you?
Bolt and Southee were, and it was working a treat. They were getting movement. And I think I heard McCullum this morning say they were trying to bowl towards the top of off stump, but the bowlers were just getting it wrong. And these days, if you get it a little bit wrong, yes, you will go. I think you've got to give a fair amount of credit to Joe Root and Owen Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
They batted very, very well, and they're in top form. But this bowling and this bowling attack has to be a concern. And I think I've heard it mentioned on your show a lot this morning, Martin, the loss of Shane Bond, I think, is being felt.
Yeah, Graham, that's two records that we don't want, 408 and then this one as well, and that's within the space of four games. I know if we win the last one, okay, we'll probably forget about it, but should we?
I mean, it is to all, I guess. But yeah, those are two big records against a side that you wouldn't expect to be breaking them. I also thought Hale's batted really well, actually, because that got the innings off to a flyer. I mean, they were going at 10 and over pretty much in that first partnership. So I think that sort of set in the mindset, and that's when the bowlers started to lose confidence. Is it a bit early to say we're missing Shane Bond? Again, I think Trent Bolt's absence was a bit of a factor.
No, I blame Tony Redding's, Andrew. Yeah, you know, it had...
There's in the bottom line, what did the Black Caps get this morning? 350?
349.
You should not be losing a game in that.
Well, mate, you shouldn't lose it. You shouldn't lose it by the 25th over.
How cricket is changing or has changed and the new attacking mindsets and what have you and the boundaries and the pitches and the bats and the players. But I don't think it's changed that much. You look at the World Cup and every game teams weren't scoring 350, no, they 400.
No.
When you score 350 first, you should not be losing.
Well, Graham, this is the point. I mean, chasing that down, look at the record books. It's happened stuff all times. It's happened, what, about four times?
Yeah, well, there was that 420-odd game in South Africa about...
2006?
That was a while... No, I think it was even longer ago than that, actually, about 15 years ago. And that sort of set the platform, and people sort of thought that that would never get beaten. I actually think it probably will someday, with the rate that teams are scoring.
All right.
We need to talk.
We do need to talk. And what I want to do is I want to, you know... Origin, because here I am riding my chair around the studio like a horse. Queensland, go on.
How many New South Wales fans are actually in New Zealand?
Me?
There's only about three, isn't there?
Me, my brother, Sam Ackerman, and I met this guy, Kurt, at the stadium last night, four of us.
Good old Kurt. There you go.
Well, that doesn't matter, mate. I mean, we might be a small vocal minority.
Oh, it was a great game, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I think it's breathed some life, obviously, back into the series because it was 1-1. But I think it's injected some life back into the state game, hasn't it?
Well, look, interesting what Mark Guy said about 10 or 15 minutes ago on the program, Graham, that even he wasn't excited about it until like a day before, and Gallen started mouthing off. And so the real danger was, I think, that the quality of the game was slipping below the line. What happened here is that they gave them the 10 yards, and that's what changed it.
Yeah, and I mean it was a much better game than the first one round, wasn't it? And I actually thought some of the hype this week leading up to it was a bit sort of forced and laboured. The whole Gallen thing, you just sort of, I mean, it sort of seemed a bit like boxing or wrestling or something like that, where people get into that trash.
Well, Duco's doing the, Duco is now the official promotion agency for it. You know that, don't you?
What, for the whole series?
Oh, come on. Good God. I just walked through the door, people. Come on.
Hey, Martin, watching David Clemmer, and you had Mark Geyer on this morning. Gee, it brings back memories of Geyer. Now here's a little story for you. I was at the game at the Sydney Football Stadium in 1991 when Geyer and Wally Lewis went at it.
Right.
It was pouring down with rain. I was with a group of eight lads, one of whom is in your... Is it the tight five you have on each Friday?
Yes, it is. Let me throw... Okay, that's Proctor. You were with Proctor?
No.
Okay, it wouldn't have been...
I'm not going to name...
It was McRoberts.
I'm not going to name...
It was TVNZ, it was McRoberts.
I'm not going to name anybody.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you.
It wasn't Graham, no. I tell you what, mate, it rained so hard at that game. We were sitting in about the third row from the front, just on where the stadium roof stopped.
Oh, brilliant. So that just like a waterfall.
Absolutely saturated. I had a mate who had a new polar fleece, because back then in the early 90s, polar fleece was new.
Tell me it was sleeveless.
The dye ran out of it. I had my passport inside my jacket. I don't know why, but I did. I had my passport inside my jacket, and the ink ran all through the passport. It rained so hard.
Brilliant.
We were right behind Michael O'Connor when he converted from the sideline to win the game.
Yep.
It was a staggering game and a staggering sporting moment to be in at. And Martin, this was after 4 days after staying 4 days in the Cross.
Oh, that was King. You were with King then, wasn't it? I mean, it must have been King in that case.
No.
Well, it's not Shunter.
No.
It's McRoberts.
I'm not naming any names. I'll leave it there. But great memories of Mark Guy. He was one out of the box.
Just before we get on to topic number three, no one likes a corrector, Graham, but here it comes from producer Hayden about the highest record score. I said 2006. Hayden, bring it.
12th of March, 2006.
Thank you, Graham.
There you go.
Oh, don't be so disappointed, you two.
I stand corrected.
All right.
We need to talk.
Finally, 20 years ago today was, Jonah became Jonah, Graham. I think this is one of the just seminal moments of New Zealand sport.
It is. It's just a shame what happened next. But, a seminal moment, one of the most complete performances ever put in by an All Blacks side, and arguably the most memorable piece of commentary in New Zealand sport.
Yeah, Andrew, I've got a quote here from somebody who's texted in and said, oh, that's not a memorable piece, it's just Keith Quinn going off. No, you don't understand.
No, that's totally incorrect. Look, I think that would have to be the most memorable rugby union try in history. We can debate that.
Okay.
Certainly the modern era, and that would have to be the most memorable piece of rugby commentary, I think, ever.
What you've got to understand here, listeners, is that when you do these commentaries, you prepare, and these guys prepare, Andrew prepares and Keith prepares and Nigel prepares, they all prepare. But moments like that, it's like when the quarterfinal, we replay that awful commentary of yours about, you know, they've shocked the world, bloody France. But at that moment in time, it overtakes, doesn't it, Andrew?
Yep, you can think of things in your head. You can write lines down on pieces of paper. You can prepare whatever way you like, Martin. But often in games, especially rugby games, things are thrown at you where you never thought in a million years they would happen, and that's what happened that day to a large degree. And I think the lack of words makes that commentary what it is.
Bingo.
And the story behind it makes that piece of commentary what it is.
I think exactly, Graham. Do you agree?
Oh, totally. The fact that it was so completely unscripted. You know, it wasn't like the America's Cup is the New Zealand's Cup, etc. This was totally unscripted. And again, as Andrew says, the beauty of silence. And that's what we sort of learned when we look back at Richie Beno's career, that he knew how to use silence. And in that bit of commentary, there was some silence.
Look, it was just open mouth awe and wonder. That's what I get from Keith's commentary. Andrew?
And it's still watching it to this day, Martin, and we will have it on, I'm pretty sure, on the news tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
You, no matter how many times you watch that, it still sends a shiver down the spine.
It's still worth watching. Because, you know, I think, you know, Andrew was right, Graham, when he said that. It's one of the most important moments in the sport ever. And it just, you know, these things happen without you knowing. You know, that you can't plan it. You can't plan Diego's hand of God. You can't plan this. Because the pass from Graham Bashop actually was behind him was a bit poor, to be honest. But when he got the ball, from that moment on.
Yeah, it was, and of course it coincided with the arrival of professional rugby, and rugby being taken to the global stage. John Lomu was sort of the first rugby union global star, and arguably still its biggest one that's ever been. And it was in a semi-final of the World Cup, and England hadn't touched the ball, remember?
That's right. That's right. And I think we'd scored again before they even touched the ball. And Andrew Nzinzan took the drop kick. I mean, at that stage, we were extracting Michael.
Yeah. So many strains to that game. It's remarkable, isn't it? And isn't it amazing how, 20 years since that day, rugby still has not had a star like Jonah Lomu.
Oh, good call, actually.
Will it ever have a global star like he was again? I don't know.
The other factor about it was that, remember after the haka, one of the Underwoods winked at Lomu.
Yeah, I think it was Tony, I think.
Yeah, that was a great tactic, wasn't it?
Also, to test your memories, boys, I know you're not on the Google. Score was, Andrew?
Oh, dear. 44-10?
No, Graham.
45-29.
Bang!
That makes up for getting that cricket one wrong, right?
It does.
We need to talk.
Only just, my friends. Thank you so much.